3, 2, 1, testing, go. Good morning.
Good morning, Tom.
How are you?
I am good. How are you doing?
I just gave you the whole microphone speech, and then I talked without being close to the microphone.
I know. I'm kind of trying to position myself.
First of all, let me say thank you for coming on my podcast. And second of all, I just want to tell you, you're like a ball of energy. I love your spirit. I love your smile. And I love when I see you're always just like so excited and happy. And I love that.
Yeah, thank you. I've always been this way. There's people ask me all the time, like, what are you laughing about? Or what are you so happy about? I said, just 2 feet above the ground and it can only get better.
I watched this podcast with this guy yesterday, and this guy that he had on the podcast had died and come back, and they had given him a heart transplant. And he says, how are you doing? He goes, I'm great. You know, I guess sometimes it takes dying to get that realization.
To that point.
Yeah, back to get, you're making a list of gratitude. Like, I'm just happy to be alive.
Yeah, if I set my expectations that way, I'm never unhappy then.
Sometimes we get so caught up in just garbage.
I agree.
And it's just like we're carrying all this garbage, and the reality is we should just be grateful that we're alive and breathing and so much excitement. I mean, especially on a day like today when it's just beautiful.
It's so nice out there.
This is that day that happens every spring. You're like, bam, today's the day. I just feel great.
Yeah, the weather has a lot to do too. But it's all good, and just excited. So many things coming my way, and you know, it's good times.
Are you the kind of person that believes, like, you know, we kind of have to go through kind of a crummy winter, if you think winter's crummy, but you know, just opposite of our favorite time, but to go through that to appreciate this time of year?
Somehow I've been blessed, really, you know, then I feel like with the winter has its own special things, like it's beautiful outside and it just got to train our mind to sort of maneuver through, you know. I have a lot of people say they are sad, like seasonal affective disorder, and especially hits them hard during the winter days. And I just said that there's beauty in every season, just train yourself to feel in a certain way, and we are trainable people.
I love winter, and I didn't always, because I used to work outside in a different kind of, I used to work in the golf course industry, and so my winters were spent outside, so I dreaded them. And now that I don't do that anymore, I really like winter, you know. I don't mind if I don't have to work outside in it, and luckily, or we're blessed enough that we are in an area where the winter isn't so bad, you know. If we were farther up north, up in like New York, or even, I have a friend that lives up in Syracuse, you know, he loves that snow, but I mean, they literally, you know, they dig tunnels for the most part, you know, getting around, but he loves that, and that wouldn't work for me, so I would probably be really, I'd have whatever the blues that come from winter that people get, I would probably have it. So real quick, just introduce yourself, because...
Yeah, so my name is Pinky, and people call me Dr. Pinky, so it is used to be my nickname, and... I ended up keeping it because, for good or bad, people remember this name, you know. So
it's a great name.
And my legal name, of course, is Pinky Bora Saikia. And I've been practicing, so I'm an internist, and I've been practicing here in the U.S. for the last 10 years.
Now, I'm not sure what an internist. Can you explain that?
Yeah, sure. So internist means someone trained in internal medicine.
Okay.
So, which is kind of three from where all the specialties branch out. So people go on from internal medicine to doing like kidney specialist or the heart specialist, or the joint specialist, and different kind of specializations. But that's kind of a basis or the foundation.
So you're a doctor?
I am a doctor.
You're a Well, you're my first doctor.
Oh, thank you.
I'm moving up. That's so exciting. This is official now.
I am so thankful that you invited me to be here.
Wow. Podcasting is apparently kind of taking off, and it's something that I can do. I'm not a doctor. I'm a pretty basic kind of guy. But it allows me that I can still talk to people like doctors and learn. Because I always say, you know, it's always about promoting small business, locals helping locals. But if I can learn something, it's great. And if I can put a light on somebody that's doing great things, that's even better. So I appreciate you coming on, because I, you know, It's nice to have exciting people, you know, and you have a great personality. So I was excited to have you on. So thank you.
Thank you. So, yeah, we actually learn from each other. Yep. So if you're learning from me as far as my expertise, I'm learning from you as to, you know, I've never been in a podcast before. And I asked my 12-year-old, how does this work? And he said, just be yourself. And I said, okay, this is a generation which is, I think, sort of very... I guess they are very tuned with everything. They know how to be. And we, when we were kids, we were expected to behave in a certain way, do in a certain things. But I love it. I mean, he said, just be yourself and try not to be too boring. He said.
Well, and you know, young people do know about podcasts, but I don't know. Podcasts are interesting, and we won't get into a whole big conversation about it. But I do want to say that I've listened to some. There are some that are very professional that I'm not as much interested in. There are some others that are just real people just chatting, mm-hmm. you know, exposing themselves as either, you know, not that bright or super bright, but still ability to chat with other folks and have mm-hmm. a good time. And I'm interested in that. I like that. I don't always want to feel like, you know, like, oh, that's something that I could never do. Like, mm-hmm. I could never be, you know, David Muir. Mm-hmm. I love David. We watch one news program, ABC News, with David Muir, and we love David Muir. Yeah. I could never be a David Muir, but I could have a podcast.
Yeah, super cool. I was really, when Athena mentioned you, I was like, wow, how cool is that?
And she did. We did a great podcast together. She was terrific. And then I found out she did another podcast with another friend of mine. I was like, oh, geez, I thought I was the only one, but... And that's the other thing. What I also like about podcasting is that I can listen to one and then I can stop and go do something and then I can pick back up. It's mm-hmm. not like, and I, you know, no disrespect to radio and other broadcasting platforms, but, you know, I can remember like sitting and listening to the radio until, you know, they finally got to the guest that I wanted to hear, and hopefully it worked around my schedule, because if it didn't, I never got to hear them. So
yeah.
That's the nice thing also about podcasting.
Sure.
And then what else was I going to say? I had another great point. I just forgot it. Let's get back to you.
Okay.
Pinky, go ahead.
Well, so, yeah, my journey. So my journey, I don't even know where to start, but it's going to be 25 years in medicine when I first went into medical school. I'm like, 25 years of medicine? That's a long ride. And if you don't have passion in this field, you're just going to either get burnt out or not like or be miserable. And I just love helping people. I've always been this way.
So are you practicing medicine now?
Correct. So I'm certified by American Board of Internal Medicine. That's something that's kind of my bragging rights.
Do you know Bashara? Hello?
Hello, yeah, I do.
He's in internal medicine
correct,
too, right?
Correct, and he's great.
He's
a great guy.
I
like him a lot, and he's been in the community for a long time.
I've known Bashara for... 16 years. I do his wife's hair. I mean, I cut her hair. Heidi, sometimes when she's, you know, she's busy, she's got the gym and stuff. So whenever.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's always like, can you get me in? And so our schedule's challenged a little bit. But yeah, they're great folks.
Yeah, and he's somebody I look up to sometimes because he's been in the field and he gives all these talks that I learn so much from. So yeah, he's a great guy.
I need to see if he'll do the podcast.
He might.
He's a great internal medicine.
Well, now I'm going to feel like you.
You were the first. You were the first.
Okay.
Well, and it's, you know, you're taking I don't want to say a chance, but, you know, you're putting yourself out there and you're not exactly sure. So, you know, it's, you're the first. You're groundbreaking.
Thank
you. So how are you involved with the girls upstairs?
Oh, so this is interesting.
Great group up there.
Great group.
A real benefit to the, I don't know, to the salon, but to my area. I love, you know. All those girls, they always wave. They're just so kind. I love that.
Just the energy when you walk in and you feel so happy. And these group, they're very interesting and very, very kind, like you said. It's just a whole different atmosphere up there. So
sometimes I'll go up there. Like the other day, I carried a bottle of water up there. I was like, what's going on, everybody? And she's like, shh, Athena's got a client. I said, I got to get out of here because I'm just disruptive. Go stomping down the stairs. Bye.
You're funny. Yeah, I do. So I actually met Athena about like maybe 2.5 years back.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't mind me saying it, but she came to see me as a patient. And then I was learning yoga from her.
Okay.
So that's how we started off. And funny enough, she was saying, oh, you know, you need to get out of here. And it was, I said, what are you talking about? I like this, you know, what I'm, where I am at and what I'm doing. And then 2.5 years later, and it was the same calling. Like, it was very weird that I thought about her and she called me. And it was like, it was meant to be. So she said, hey, Dr. Pinky, what are you up to? And I said, you know, I really want to practice holistic medicine. You know, I've been thinking about it for probably forever.
Can you define holistic medicine?
Yeah, so this is very interesting. So holistic medicine is kind of like an integrated approach where you're not just putting medicines and just giving pharmaceutical driven. We're coming away from that and getting into the back to roots, which is just taking care of yourself. Yoga, meditation are big tools to help, you know, de-stress. As we know, most of our diseases are so complex, and we know a lot of it is physical, but a lot of the intertwined with emotional health and mental health that plays a huge part. We forget and neglect that. And, you know, traditional practice, which I was doing prior to when I joined here, was all about meeting numbers. I had to see 25 to 30 patients. I barely spent 10, 15 minutes. And I was not really happy because I didn't know the person. I only knew the disease. Right. Like, if you were to come to me, I'm like, okay, what do you have? High blood pressure. Okay, let's see, your blood pressure is high. You take this or... That's it. That's all I had time for. Now, here in holistic medicine, I really try to sit down and just talk for an hour. So most patients spend an hour already in doctor's office, but it's like 57 minutes in the waiting room and 3 minutes with the doctor.
That creates high blood pressure.
You're right. And so why not spend that 1 hour with the doctor? And fortunately, you know, I took a huge leap of faith, and I figured this is what I want to do.
When do you think? Do you think people should start being held accountable for their health?
Yes and no. I think we do a poor job in educating people, and the health literacy is not so much in place. So people sometimes need that push, and sometimes needs to be, they're just like children, you know. Sometimes I feel some of my patients, they don't listen, and that's their personality. And for, we are held accountable if they're not doing well, but a huge part of it, that's the one thing I want to try to do, is have the partnership. Like, you are accountable, I'm accountable, we're in this together, our goal is the same success. And that's your health. That's our goal together.
Yeah, but I think actually doctors are held more accountable for other people's health than the people that they're treating. And I guess as a doctor, I understand that. But, you know, it's like in the hair business. If someone doesn't wash their hair or someone doesn't take care of the color and you know, it's not my fault. Mm-hmm. You know, but I think people will like to blame doctors. Oh, they don't know what they're talking about. Mm, and it's true. Like at some point, you know, and you mentioned it earlier, you know, back to basics. You know, I feel like, you know, I've been doing some different things with a diet. I'm only eating one meal. People say that's intermittent fasting. I call it back to basics, you know. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like, especially with like nutrition, you know, our bodies haven't evolved to where the evolution of being able to get food has grown to, you know, like there's still no, we're not seeking, we're not suffering to find it. You know, it's just like, oh, I got a grumble. Let me get a bacon, egg and cheese.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, you know, people, and you can answer this, cause I've said it on the podcast several times, and I've said it to many people, and I guess I should maybe see if it's true, but I heard that 2 out of 3 Americans are post or pre type 2 diabetic.
You are true. The numbers are alarming. And, you know, the metabolic syndrome and the obesity is all a huge part of this is food habits. And that's something, it's the culture, I think. Because I'll tell you a story. When my mom visited me here in the U.S. for the first time, and we took her to a diner. And when they brought in our orders, she thought that plate was for all four of us.
Exactly.
And I was like, that's yours. She said, what? And so I feel like we would, that plate would serve four people back in India.
It probably would. I had a friend, I have a friend named Sarab who's in New Delhi who does some computer stuff for me. And I posted a picture on my Facebook, and it showed this guy with these two-liter bottles tied to his feet.
Right.
And Sarab said in India, those would be a luxury.
Very know? True. Very true for most of people.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like the food. It's I can only imagine what she thought. I'm blown away by some of the I won't even eat out anymore.
And that's great because, you know, it's just home-cooked meal and nutrition. That's what we are trying to get a nutritionist on board too, so that will complete our whole group because nutrition is the most important thing. And exercise and all that is all natural way. You will see a huge change once you change your diet. You know, some people have said to me that I was able to get people off so many medications just because they changed their lifestyle.
Well, can I tell you about this diet I'm doing?
Yeah,
and I'm not,
yeah,
it's
sure.
not even a diet. I call it a reconnection with nutrition, understanding why I'm even eating in the first place.
Right.
I started doing something that I call just supper. So I only eat supper, and I only eat at 7, one
okay.
meal a day.
Okay.
I was eating breakfast and lunch and dinner and all this stuff before. And I was a big into running, and my foot injured it, so I couldn't run. I was able to eat like crap if I was running 25 miles a week.
Right.
But when I wasn't able to run, I couldn't. I was gaining weight, mm-hmm. and I was feeling terrible. And so I just went to this thing called just supper, and I only eat one meal. And people right away go, "Oh my God, I could never do that. My blood sugar." Would drop, and I'm like, I don't even think you know what even blood sugar dropping even is. But one of the things that I've learned from doing this is that I eat a lot of food because I'm bored. It's a habit. I use food to break the ice. It's like a transition from client to client. I would, you know, eat almonds and stuff between clients because it just kind of, I don't know what it was, but it was just something I relied on.
Yeah.
And when I started doing this, I had to break up with breakfast. I had to break up with lunch. And the first week, it was depressing, you know, because it was mm-hmm. an emotional connection. But afterwards, it's just freed my life up, this letting go of all this food. And when did we become so entitled to eat so much food?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
When did it happen? Do you know?
Yeah, so I can totally relate to that because I see the difference in other countries where, you know, here there's the abundance and we don't know how to limit ourselves. It's because it's, and the fast food industry, because it's cheap, it's easy, and I think access is the main thing.
When we have so much food available to us, for me, I wasn't paying attention to the quality or what I was eating because it was just so much. I'm like, wow.
This is great.
But when I started just eating dinner, I started becoming very aware and very excited or concerned about what I was eating. You know, if I had one opportunity to eat, I wanted to make it really good.
Right.
And I don't mean, you know, like superfoods. I mean like a steak, a baked potato with butter, sour right. cream, mm-hmm. organic broccoli. Mm-hmm. You know, all of a sudden I've started being, you know, oh, maybe I'll get organic now because it's one meal, so I might as well make it really good.
True.
So now I'm more concerned about it being organic. Not required, but if I can, I'll choose the organic. I'll pay the 17 cent difference, you know.
Right.
It's like, I can't afford organic. It's 17 cents, you know.
Yeah.
I can afford it. And I just really start becoming aware of what I'm eating because now I'm concerned, or not. Now I want what's in the vegetable. Now I'm like, okay, well, it's my only chance. I better get what I can get.
You are conscious about what you're putting in there.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I just feel so much better. It's insane.
That's great. And then that's why they say that you should fast every now and then, pick a day, like once a week. And that's because, like, what you're doing right now is trying to get rid of all the, you know, toxins that we build up over time. And just cleansing, because in the fasting state, you can do that. And then the body also, what happens is then the fat cells are used for energy as an alternative.
Thank you. Because people have forgotten what fat is for. They think it's just to wreck our clothes. It's not. You know, our body says, okay, you know, if we were 100 years ago, 200 years ago, you know, we might get up, maybe you'd go hunt and I'll make the bread, whatever.
Yeah.
And we would come back together and you would bring what you've got and I'd bring what I have. And then we would feed our village or family or group.
Yeah.
And, you know, but we would find it. Now, we're eating so much junk that there's no work put into it. We don't appreciate it. And this fat that when there are times when it's leaner, like maybe you didn't come back with something and I didn't come back with something and all of a sudden we didn't have anything to eat.
Yeah.
Our body would, you know, we'd use the fat that we've nicely placed on our body. It's filtered and clean and tucked away in nice yellow blobs, but it's good stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I always say they make candles out of fat, not out of Cheerios, because energy is in fat.
Correct.
And sugar got us fat, not fat. Sugar got us fat.
That's true.
And people are taking all the good stuff out of food. I always say if it says fat-free, it should say fuel-free. I think it would probably change the way that we look. Oh, this is fuel-free. I don't want the fuel-free stuff. I want fuel.
Need the fuel.
Right? How can we re-educate people? Can we teach people to, I mean, how do you do that? How do you handle that?
It's a big task. So that's why you need the time. Whenever I get a chance to sit with the patient, I make sure go over the nutrition part. That's because that's so important. That's something I never did before because I had no time to talk about it, you know.
I would love you to come on the podcast and just talk nutrition.
Yeah, that'll be great, actually.
Because I didn't pay enough attention to it. All of a sudden, now I'm 50, and I want to pay attention now.
Nice.
You know, it's weird as you get older. Now I'm concerned.
Well, 50 is not. It's pediatrics nowadays because our life expectancies are in like 80s and 90s. Mm-hmm. So you're doing good and making a start here. That'll be great. I think nutrition is so important, and just the whole concept of what carb is, what fat is, and I'm surprised at how much people don't know or never even think about.
I tend to think that the food industry, the sugar industry, the snacks and treat industry, you know, the deliciousness industry is fighting that education. Because if people understood and we were to really educate people on the damage of sugar and what it does, they might stop eating it.
Yeah.
Or at least cut back, and that would start to cut into somebody's bottom line.
That is true. One of my colleagues a few years back, she started this vending machines, and she and her partner would get a couple of vending machines that had organic things in there, just protein bars and everything organic made of seeds and grains, and they ran out of business because no one would buy them.
No.
And just next to where they would place them in gyms or even near libraries and places where people flock in, there were other vending machines right next to them where they had chips and Coke. And she said she tried, but no one would buy them.
Because, you know, part of me thinks that, you know, you're either in that lifestyle that, you know, manufactured food. I mean, if you're in that lifestyle, then you're probably eating junk. If you're not eating junk, you leave that lifestyle really completely. You're not buying stuff like, you know, I didn't live like that, but I would go to a vending machine. But when I stopped doing that, there's nothing that's going to be in a vending machine that I want. It could be a delicious hard-boiled egg. I'm not buying it out of a vending machine. You know, it's you kind of jump over to this place where I'm just going to eat really good food, and it doesn't exist in a vending machine.
No.
They always say, stay out of the middle of the grocery store. stay on the outside. You know, that's where everything's refrigerated.
Oh,
you know, everything in the middle.
See, I learned something.
Yeah, so stay out of the middle. That's where the trouble is.
True.
Well, you know, the cool thing that I've been doing is, so this Just Supper, I eat whatever I want. You know, I eat at 7 and I eat whatever I want. Mm-hmm. And, like, we'll have a little bit of a bowl of ice cream. I mean, everything in moderation, as people always say. But, you know, I'm not living a life where I just take everything that's good out of my life. I just cut down my calories. And I'm not even really cutting them down because I'm just cutting down the window that I'm taking them in.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard to just give up your favorite stuff.
Yeah, and the trick is not to have to do that. And know that you can still have, like you said, anything in moderation is fine. I think people get freaked out because they think, like, oh my gosh, I'm not going to be able to. I said, no, you can still have, but not just maybe instead of a bowl, you know, just take a couple of spoons and, you know, satisfy that way. But I think resetting the button is the key, resetting your body and your mind into thinking that, okay, this is really bad. Like, I was very fond of rice because I grew up in an area where the rice is our staple food.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of my friends said, oh, you know what, when you see a plate of rice, this thing, they are pallets of death. So they said, just see rice and think, oh, this is pallets of death that I'm putting in the body.
Pallets of death.
Yeah. And so every time I see rice, I'm like,
is rice bad?
Rice has a lot of carb and it's the starch. And if you're having it for lunch and dinner, then it's no good, you know.
I'm always interested in the, you know, on the calorie counter, the calorie information box that's on food. I always say that I think that, you know, it should be, you know, if it's a like a bag of raw almonds, it should say the calories and it should be in green. If it's like chocolate covered raw almonds, it should be the calories and in yellow because you have now you're starting to bring sugar and stuff into it. And if it's just a bag of Hershey Kisses, it should have the calories and it should be in red.
Yeah, wow, that color coding.
Well, three colors.
Yeah, that's awesome, actually.
But I think that if you tried to do something like that, I think that the sugar, you know, sugar people, the snack people would be like, uh-uh, we're not going to do that. We're going to fight that. Because that, you know, as much as we want Americans and humans to try to be healthy, but there's still a big group of people making a big pile of money on it.
Yeah.
And they're going to fight it. That's their livelihood.
Mm-hmm. That's the industry driven.
Right.
So that's the problem. Yeah, you're right. Just as a rule of thumb, I say that for snacks, if people are having snacks, make sure it's less than 15 grams of carb. And for big meals, less than 45. So just two numbers, remember, 45, you want to stay below that and below 15 for snacking. And that's a simple way to just know that you're not taking in too much.
Yeah. Well, if you're snacking, you're probably taking it too much. I know. If I'm snacking, I'm not reading no numbers. I just want to quietly be left alone while I eat my snacks. I don't feel bad about it.
That's funny.
So upstairs, we have a Reiki.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
A spiritual guide, sort
Correct.
Of.
Correct, yes.
We have massage. And now we have internal medicine that's kind of going on up there. It's like power force,
it's,
a group.
Yeah, and that is so good. So wisdom from the ancient medicine, that's what I grew up with my ancestors. We have a long lineage of practitioners in the family in varying capacities, which included, you know, the Ayurvedic medicine, which was Indian way off, before the Western medicine became popular. So these are Reiki, you know, these are all ancient forms of healing, and somehow they went out of favor because of the big push, I think, in the 20th or 21st century, when we, I guess, more from the pharmaceutical industry, you know, when we focus more on chemicals. But prior to that, I mean, Reiki is a great thing. I even had family members back in India giving me distance Reiki healing. Like, let's say if I'm really stressed out before exam or having like a headache or something, and it's powerful. Just because we don't understand doesn't mean it doesn't work.
Right.
I was just afraid because we don't know. But I think of it like it's very scientific. It's just look at the remote. Like you put in pressing the remote and the garage door opens. Do you actually see a connection? No. But you could be yards away, and it's so they, these are energy we're talking about. But we accept that. We know how a remote works. You know, the door opens, and we don't see anything. No one's really going and opening the door, but you're just pressing a key. But we accept that. But when they say, oh, Reiki, what is it, you know, or anything that we don't understand, I think human beings are very skeptical by nature. And what we're trying to achieve here is that incorporate all of that. If you absolutely need medicines, I tell my patients, I'm going to give it to you because we, but also make sure we're going to do the laundry list and clear everything that we don't need. Right. So keep focusing on the minimum that you absolutely needed to get you to a place where later on, hopefully you won't need anything. So that's a big part of our undertaking. And it's great. I think, Tina, I think she's a shaman, and I learned about how shaman works. And they were ancient practitioners then, when we didn't have these medical doctors.
Right.
The people were still living, still gave birth to babies. We didn't need hospitals. I mean, how did we survive? I was born at home, and my mom invited people for dinner, and I turned out okay, you know. So a lot of it is just going back to where things really worked in the past. And also currently we have, with all the advanced technologies, which is, I find it very interesting because look at where this is the most technologically advanced generation. We have everything that we need. And still people are stressed out. People are not high stress level, high suicide rates. This is the time we should have been very happy because we have so much physical comforts that we need.
I think that's the problem. Mm-hmm. We don't suffer.
Yeah, and
we don't. I mean, it's sad. I mean, it's just, you know, the relationship. I forget who said it. I'm sure it's been said several times, but someone I read or heard, you know, you're not living unless you're suffering. I think it was a guy. I think the quote was from like a Vietnam vet that was in a, you know.
Yeah.
You know, that had some, you know, awful story. But, you know, unless you're suffering, you're not living. If it's constant, everything going your way, mm-hmm. it's a miserable existence. Now, I don't know if anybody, if a lot of people can put their finger on that.
Right.
You know, I talked to a client of mine who was a psychologist, and I said, how many people that are depressed just aren't getting their way? He said probably about 80%.
Yeah, that's true.
80% of people just not getting their way. Their quick solution is a pill.
Yes, yes.
I'm sober. I got sober in 1997, and in 1996 I went to my doctor and I said, "Look, I'm depressed." And he goes, "How much do you drink?" And I said, "Well, maybe a beer to a week." I was drinking a pint of vodka a day.
Yeah, you don't want to tell that.
I didn't want to say that because he'd be like, well, maybe you should quit drinking. And I'd be like, well, that's not what I wanted to hear.
Yeah.
But I remember I tried to solve my problem with a pill, and it obviously didn't work. And I finally was able to get sober, and, you know, luckily I don't have to take that today. And I'm not criticizing people that take, you know, antidepressants if they have to, but, you know, I bet there's a lot of people that are just... They don't want to do the work. They don't want to look into it. They don't want to peel the onion, as they say, and figure out, well, you know, what's the problem?
Yeah, that's so true, because we prescribe antidepressants and anxiety medicines just like candies and not really getting to the root of the problem. There are patients who walk in saying, oh, I'm really stressed out. It's Thanksgiving. Family's coming over. I need this to get over. I'm looking to her, like, do you really know what stress...
Do you give it to him?
No.
No. Thank you. I would have been a little annoyed if you did. Because they need to be slapped in the side of the head.
I'm like, okay, you know what? Let's figure out what which I didn't have much time to talk about. Now I have. And this is what I want to do, is get people off as many pills as possible and keep them on the minimum.
When I got sober, I was not forced. I chose to use a program, you know, AA. And... in AA and NA and FA and EA and all these different anonymous programs, you know, they're basically all built around a 12-step program. You know, the first one, we admitted we were powerless over pizza or sex or drugs or alcohol.
Right.
And then the following 10 steps are basically how to get back your life.
Right.
And then the last step is really, you know, to always have your hand out there for anybody that ever needs help.
Mm-hmm.
The 10 in the middle changed my life, and it had nothing to do with alcohol, but it really showed me what a self-centered, I have the disease of self. You know, it's about me. And I say I'm a self-centered asshole with a deficiency in humility. That's my disease. But it's well, the truth. You know,
yeah.
I'm whether it's me or how all humans are, but, you know, I think God or whoever created us, you know, built in humility into us, you know, walking, talking, you know, our legs.
Right.
You know, there's nothing like the look on a child when he takes his first steps. That's just amazement, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second step, you know, it fades after that, you know.
Right.
And 10, 20, 30 years later, you're like, yeah,
you forget. Walk.
I gotta walk over and get something out of the refrigerator. You know, and we don't give a shit about these wonderful things that have been given to us until they get taken away.
That's
and
true.
Then all of a sudden, oh, my legs were the most important things. And no, they really weren't. You didn't talk mm-hmm. about them at all mm-hmm. until you lost them or whatever it is.
Right.
And I hope no feelings get hurt when I talk about this, but it's humility, you know, it's, you know, walking, you know, I think we'd all prefer to float. I think we'd all prefer to have telepathy, you know, maybe
right.
not have to chew, but you know, they're all things that build humility into us. And the problem is that there's not a lot of humility in a habit, and a lot of those things become a habit
mm-hmm.
and we forget, and then we become, you know, inconvenienced and bothered by life. And then it just is like a tornado or what was, like a black hole. It gets farther and farther in, and then you just don't know what the problem is.
Yeah, it's just a spiral downward.
Yeah, and those steps in that program, at least for me, and I think even Oprah had a 10-step program, and I think it was pretty much based loosely on that,
mm-hmm.
but it was really identifying, you know, I'm not the most important thing in the world, and usually when I have a problem, if I whittle it down enough, I can usually figure out it's me not getting my way.
That's true.
You know, it's usually a jealousy or, you know, so I wish I had that. I wish I was as good as them. I wish I wasn't, you know, and it's
the negativity.
Yeah. And I always say I'm grateful I wasn't an alcoholic because I was able to really identify with some of this stuff.
Yeah, the gratitude is a big, big part, just being grateful for little things. But in a way, you're right. Unless you have challenges, which everybody does. Have challenges in life, and this makes you more understanding. And I'm more empathetic now because I've gone through a lot of, you know, challenges over the years in migrating from India to being in a total different place with no family, you know, all these things, and also the different lifestyle and the medicine part, figuring it out again. You know, I already was practicing in India as well. So all these, I feel that if I didn't have these challenges, I fear that I might have become an arrogant one too, you know. I would have been like, oh, I don't give a damn about anybody else. But I guess these challenges are or what you had to go through. If we learn and we get over it, I guess we become better people. But like you said, you know, if you engross in myself, why me, then
well, and I never,
miserable.
It's, I work on this every day. I'm never going to get over it. It's how I'm wired. I just have to recognize it, you know.
Right.
If I'm having a crappy day, I usually can figure out that I'm not getting what I want somewhere, whether it's, you know, through envy, you know.
Yeah.
I always say, you know, every time I head out into the future and the past, because usually it's somewhere out there. I'm like,
right.
you know, what I'm going to be or what I used to be.
Yeah.
I'm usually carrying some deadly sin with me, you know, whether it's pride, ego, gluttony, you know, something. I'm going out there and I say, hey, dude, chill out. Come on back.
It's nice sometimes when you can talk to yourself that way.
Well, and, you know, and my son, my youngest son, Sam, he has some anxiety. He worries about, worries about going to college. I'm like, dude, you're in third grade. Let's stay in the moment.
Right.
But we practice about, you know, and I'm not religious. I believe in higher power, but,
right.
you know, we practice on, you know, turning it over, saying it out loud, you know, dear God, I can't take this. I'm turning it over to you. My
Surrender.
Shoulders aren't big enough.
Mm-hmm.
Surrender it.
Mm-hmm.
Let God help you. Believe in God or not, just recognizing that there's something bigger than me or him.
Right.
And it helps him. You know, he lets it go. You know, we talk about staying in the moment.
Staying in the moment
is a gift. Mm-hmm. And it helps him because if I feel like if if we didn't try to do something like that, maybe one day he could be have to maybe have anxiety medicine, maybe. But, you know, we try that now, and it really
great.
Helps him.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I feel the same way with my son, too. Like, they're stressed. He wants to do certain things. I said, the important, we have to, again, make sure that we engineer the mind and into thinking that, okay, you just need to be doing well, be a good human being. That's most important. And then, you know, certain things you may not get it, and that's okay. I guess a lot of things that we carry are from childhood. I've seen people with anxiety and depression have a lot of baggage from early on. So that's why it's very important to talk to our kids about everything.
You know, it's funny. I was adopted, and I really struggled as a kid. You know, with I feel like I fit in, but I ended up on a path of drugs and smoking pot and all this stuff. And my parents used to take us to see a psychologist. You know, a psychologist never mentioned to me about humility or, you know, arrogance or any of those, you know, those self-centered kind of facets, you know.
Right.
It was always just like this conversation. And then I wasn't on any, they weren't really issuing out pills back then as a kid.
Okay.
But do you think to kind of start fixing, you know, because we have a situation, I believe we have a situation. Do you think we start sharing this stuff with our kids now and start talking about, like, these type of topics, you know, turning it over, you know, humility? Is that too soon, or what do you think?
And, well, I think that you have to, if you have a third grader, you have to kind of talk in simple terms, mm-hmm. at his level, or if you have a fifth grader at his level. But I think it's the discussion should be done early on about, like, oh, well, what did you do today? And we had such a great day. Okay, you didn't have a good day, and that's okay. We are still together as a family. We're having dinner, or, you know, just the gratitude, I think, goes a long way. And I tell my son all the time, too, that, you know, just be thankful that people are doing that. Anything anybody does for you, be thankful, because, you know, it takes effort. And people, once we start thanking each other for what we get, I think it'll all be a better place for all of us. But we're just, either we are complaining too much or just not tuned to our emotional needs. I mean, I think a big part of what we forget is focusing on the emotional health, which is so important.
Right.
Mental health. And
and how much of that is just lazy thinking? You know, when my son sits there and says, oh, you know, I don't want to move to, when I start college, I don't want to live there. That's easy to think that, and that's easy to kind of suffer there. But if you take a second and use some brain power and realize you're only in second grade and work through it, you can start to bring yourself back. I mean, you know, I always say cussing is a lazy word. You know, it's a simple word, but if you really have to use your brain and use your words, it requires some more thought.
I think you got a smart one there. He's already thinking ahead.
No,
farther.
It's not good. Because, you know, when I wanted to make a cartoon for the New Yorker. If I could draw it, I would send it in. But the cartoon would be me or a person standing in front of two doors, the future and the past, and the seven deadly sins in suitcase version form in front of him. You know, where am I going and what am I taking with me? Because anytime you're in the future, there's some sin that you're taking with you, whether it's pride or ego. You know, letting the world know what an awesome person, you know, I always say, I ride in on my white horse and kick everyone's ass. And I don't have a horse and I've never kicked anyone's ass. So that's pride and ego involved in that one.
True.
So, you know, talking about these things with our kids now, I mean, if I would have maybe liked to have had that conversation. I don't know if it would have changed anything, but.
It definitely would change because it's a bond that you're building up. Where we have to, you know, like, sow the seed early on. And then it's very important, I feel, that parents or, you know, even if you have friends, just to know what's going on with them and try to help. And sometimes either you're not really, you don't really care what the other person is going through. But you'd be surprised how many people are suffering inside, that they have no let out. You know, they don't know where to do, where to go, or who to talk to. And we can make a little difference in everybody's lives, I think.
Well, and all the stuff that I'm telling my son to practice are the things that I practice. These are all things I do because I honestly left it, not doing this stuff. I'll go insane. I'll drink. I'll use a drug. I'll do something because it just becomes, I become a victim.
Right. And because we have time and then, you know, it's too easy to fall for drugs, alcohol or any other, you know, vices because... then momentarily you're just trying to numb your pain. But if you're just going deeper and like that's what Reiki helps with. And I think Athena does past life regressions and all those are now beginning to be recognized in the world of psychology.
I had a session with Athena. She was great. You know, but like when I talked to Athena about it, I mean, you know, you have to have an open mind. Yeah. You know, if you want to go in there and you want to pick and fight about every little thing... it ain't going to work for you, you know, but if you have an open mind and you just want relaxing and to just, you know, I love those crystals, you know, I love her little box of stuff, you know, yeah. It's all this cool stuff. When I lived out in San Diego, I had a lot of friends that were into like crystals, but they were also on drugs too. But, you know, I remember this one girl's like, hold this crystal. And I was like, okay. And I could feel this like tingling in my hand. I could feel energy and I wanted to feel it and I could feel it. And since then, anytime I try to hold a crystal, you can always feel the energy. So I'm a believer.
Yeah.
I like that. I like...
crystal therapy actually works. They've done even studies with the electromagnetic, you know, energy. There's energy atoms everywhere in everything physical, you know. It's just getting yourself tuned to that.
Well, and you mentioned it earlier in the podcast. You know, here we are, but this space is so big. I mean, we are so small in this huge, gigantic thing. I was watching this thing the other night, and they were talking about, you know, I've always thought we started from the Big Bang.
Right.
You know, the universe just pop. But now I watched this thing, and they were saying that they think that the universe is actually expanding, getting bigger and bigger, and I'm spreading my arms out for people that don't know what I'm doing, but it gets bigger, and now then eventually it starts to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And gravity starts pulling it back and pulling it back and pulling it back. And then it shoot, boom, and does it again. And they think that what we are in right now is a re-expanding of the universe again.
Right.
I'm like, that is so, you know.
That's so cool.
Yeah. I mean, galaxies and billions and stuff. And here we are in this little room doing this podcast and, you know, our little problems. But it's amazing. Quantum mechanics, all this. I don't know anything about it. I'll watch a podcast on quantum mechanics for 2 hours and not understand anything, but just be so fascinated by
it. I was going to say that's beyond my...
But there's something, you know, like you say, you have to trust. There is energy. There is other things like pushing the garage door opener. Mm-hmm. And that was a great example. You push the button, the door goes up.
Yeah.
We're cool with that. But something went through the air and flew across the air into the garage to make the door go up. We didn't see it, but it happened.
Yeah.
So why can't we believe in like energy from crystals and this?
Yeah, that's how I think I process in my mind. I said, I don't understand it, but doesn't mean it doesn't exist. So when I worked in the hospital and every time we had a full moon, we would get dozen more admissions than we normally do in the hospital. I'm like, oh my gosh,
I've
full
heard
moon. And everybody says that, but really, like, look at the moon's effects on the sea or the water. Like, the tides go up, so that's a big pool. And we're made of, 70-80% of water. So our bodies are also, you know, having some kind of a turbulence. And that's the thing. If you really think, I mean, the sea is affected, so we're only human beings. Why not human beings?
Well, in that show that I was watching, they were talking about something that, you know, there's time and there's space, and then there's space-time.
Mm-hmm.
And space-time runs on like a plane, and it's affected by gravity. So as the bigger an object, the bigger the gravity, the faster time goes. So, like, they were even saying, like, if you had a three-story building, the people on the bottom floor, they're at basically running at normal time. The second floor and higher, as the higher that you go, time speeds up. It's only a little bit in that small area, but like satellites that go around the Earth,
right?
They have to program in something into the program that it keeps adjusting the time every day because they are going at a faster time.
Oh,
the farther you are away out of space-time, You know, it's...
That's fascinating.
It's very fascinating. And I, you know, I always say, you know, when you look at a puddle and you see the reflection, I sometimes think, is that another world?
Yeah.
You know, under there, you know, I see it.
That's true. It could. I mean, there's so many things fascinating that we don't know is happening all around us.
Well, and I love how, you know, even as a kid, and you, I don't know how old you are, but I'm assuming we're roughly this around the same age. But, you know, as a kid, we grew up and we had the, you know, we had the sun and we had Mercury and, you know, Pluto and all the different planets, and they all just kind of roam. And now we're finding out that there's a lot more.
Yeah, a lot
you know,
more.
But up until then, we were like, yeah, I think I'm fine with that. You know, I like what they've shown us and I believe it. And now they're saying, oh, by the way, we have millions of other planets out there. And you're like, oh.
Yeah, we have to change now. It's your like, whole concept.
It's like we're always waiting for an update. Oh, update. Guess what? More planets. Oh, update. You know, and you're like, yeah. Oh, okay. So, yeah, it never seems to be. And now they're saying that this Big Bang has actually happened. They think maybe this is like happened before. Like it just always keeps happening.
Wow. I didn't know that. And I learned something today, too.
And I'm not even a doctor.
No, this is fascinating.
I am what a hair doctor.
You are. We're all doctors in some shape or form.
Well, and that's it's kind of funny because I was talking to a guy yesterday and I said, when do you want to become a professional of you? When do you want to become a professional of you? When do you want to understand you in a professional manner? I mean, like, you know, this Just Supper program that I'm just trying or I'm doing, you know, when... you have uncomfortability from not eating or whatever it is, and automatically, or, you know, if I have a conversation, a person will say, well, they say, or they've said, or they say. And I'm like, who are they? And when do we want to start becoming a professional? Like, if you told me you need to eat 8 small meals a day, which someone has told me recently, I'm like, no, I'm a professional of me, and I know that 8 small meals a day isn't working for me.
Because you know yourself. It's learning to know your body.
Yeah, and when do we want to start becoming a professional of us? When do we want to start understanding, you know, some of these other, like, just like what I was talking about, when you feel uncomfortable, right away we've been told that's when we should eat. Excuse me. But maybe you should have a drink of water. Maybe you should let that pain pass. Is it pain? Is it just your body adjusting? You know, a lot of stuff's going on in there.
Mm-hmm.
Is it always, like, sometimes, like, I'll get shaky. And I used to say, oh, I need to eat. Sometimes I think that I get stuck in a shallow breathing kind of thing. Like, I'm not really breathing enough.
Yeah.
Sometimes, if that happens, now I try breathing. I take in some
deep
big breaths. And
mm-hmm.
just see, I let it kind of play itself out.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned earlier that I love running. One of the things that I've learned is that, you know, I can be running, and they'll call it bonking. And I'm not, I mean, I'll run 5 miles. I'm not running marathons. I can't tell you exactly what happens, but I know that I'll have a point where I go, I just can't run anymore. I'm just bonked out.
Right.
It would be a great opportunity to have like a gel pack or a handful of almonds. Oh, I've run out of energy.
Yeah.
But it's also great to let my body start figuring out where else it can eat. You know, it's maybe been feeding on what I've eaten the night before.
Right.
But maybe it heads to my love handles, you know.
Yeah.
If I wait a couple minutes, it passes, and then I can actually start running again. So I've learned that. I'm starting to become, I'm a little more of an amateur, I'm not quite professional, but I'm learning about my vehicle.
Right, right.
And it is a vehicle.
It is.
We've been given for free. And some people treat their Porsche or their other car better than their vehicle that they've been given.
Right, and, this is true.
So, you know, I think that's a great question. Do we try to teach people a little bit about that kind of stuff, becoming a professional of us?
Well, that's a very good... Actually, I'm going to steal those lines and then try to incorporate that with the patients and see, well, what do you feel? Now I kind of ask the open-ended questions, which I never did before. Before it was like, okay, you have this, take this. I mean, I said, well, how do you feel about being on like 6 pills a day? I mean, how does that make you feel? Do you want to take one out and see for 2 days how you feel without the medicine? And a lot of times just the discussions and learning your own body. I'm like, I can throw any medicine at you, but you're the one taking it. So you have to figure out whether you're ready or, you know, in either case to stop or to take the medicine.
I've wanted to write a book called Checking My Knee Pressure. And on the cover is a guy sitting in a doctor's office with a blood pressure cuff around his head. Because I don't know if we check that enough. You know, we check our blood pressure and our sugar. But how's your head? You know, how's your me?
Yeah.
And I feel like there's a lot of people that, you know, they're not getting their way.
No.
And it creates a big issue.
Mm-hmm.
And, but, you know, one person at a time, I guess, you know.
Yeah, well, even it does feel good, even if you're seeing that success that you both the patient and the doctor is wanting, let's say. And it does happen, though, so there's always hope. And even if you can change one life or you can change as many, it's a good feeling, you know. I'm really blessed and privileged that people entrust their, you know, health. But yeah, am I frustrated? Sure, because some of them, I said, there's no cure for non-compliance. Like, I said, oh, I'm not doing well. I'm not, but they're not even listening and not doing the things that, like you said, accountability. That's the only struggle I face with patients, is not from the other side to be equally accountable for.
Do you think that there's, like, we're so worried about feelings? It's like, you know, I had a lady that was in here the other day, and I said, you should try my Just Supper program. She goes, why? Do you think I'm fat?
They get people get offended.
I'm like, I couldn't say it because I didn't want to hurt her feelings.
Yeah, but that's right. You don't want to. As human beings, we don't want to cause the other person any discomfort.
But we'll let them, like, eat themselves to death. I mean, we'll just, it's weird. It's like, yeah, you're fat. I mean, I love you, and you're fat, and we can work on it. But understand, you're fat.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but you got there, and that, you know, it's...
I think it's mostly a culture thing, because in India, people would not hesitate to call you fat,
like, right,
at any moment. I went to India after 9 years, and I was like, oh, look at you. What have you turned into? And these are people I never talked even. They were like neighbors. I didn't see them for years. But everyone was quick to call me fat. And
well,
then didn't even feel, and didn't feel anything. I'm like, oh, we can't recognize. You've like tripled over or something of that nature. So, and we were joking. One of my friends was like, she gained a lot of weight. She said, I wish I went to India frequently. Then I would know how much. Because here, they kept telling her, oh, you look great, you look great. And she was gaining and gaining.
Well, and that's kind of like what this whole Just Supper thing is. It's like, you know, do it for a week. Find out what you think about, you know, your relationship with nutrition. Why do you even eat? Not you, but why do we eat?
Yeah, true.
But yeah, it's like you can't hurt anybody's feelings.
I think food is a big emotional thing for most people. They're attached to food because of certain emotions.
And we also have so many examples of, you know, they put out these examples of people that you think that are what we should be like. One of the things that I've really liked about what I've been doing is that, you know, I've been losing weight. I'm not, you know, people go, you are not fat. You are thin. Yeah, well, standing in front of a mirror, I see some fat. And it's not, I'm not freaked out about it, but I'm far from thin. So, but I have to also figure out where I kind of, what's my standard weight, you know, because I don't really know, because I want to be like these supermodel guys, these chiseled out, you know, bros. And, you know, that's kind of, as a 50-year-old man, that's kind of the example that I have to kind of shoot for. I can't achieve it. I can't lift that much weight. I'm not that, you know, I have a great wife. I have a wonderful family, and,
yeah,
and I don't need to be that awesome, but I also don't, I will fatten up. I'm just, you know, 1,000 years ago, I'd probably be great for like out hunting without food for days. But in America, I will fatten up. So I have to find, the nice thing about this is my weight's really been kind of based on how much I run.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been running for 15, I started running in 1999.
Wow.
So I've been running, but now that my foot, I had some condition with my arch, so I had to stop running. I need to find out where I'm at. If I'm just going to eat without a lot of running and a lot of exercise, what's my standard weight?
Well, the standard weight, so they call it the BMI. So you can actually have a calculator where you plug in your actual weight and your height, and it'll pop up with a number.
That's weird. I'm not really sure, because honestly, if I did that, I've done that, and I would probably fall under the obese category.
But the thing is that just realistic goals, you know, if you're limited to running, then maybe just walking or just any kind of exercise. I say activity as tolerated. Just keep moving your body. Just, you know, park your car way far and then walk to. And over time, you don't know how many steps you're taking, a lot more than you think. So,
I'm active. I walk. I'm not
you look it, but I know we all have these things where we want to be a certain thing, but realistically, sometimes it's just a little bit distorted, because for me, you look great, you know?
Yeah, and for me, you look great. I can't imagine you...
Yeah, but I think, and I struggle. I'm like, oh my gosh, I have to, you know, get my weight down. So it's the same thing. It's the perception.
You should try the Just Supper program.
I will.
Will you?
Yeah. Now that you talked about it, I'll try it for a week.
Let's try it for one week and come and talk to me. But I'll tell you that if you try it, you can't talk about it during the week. Like, you can't say, I'm doing the Just Supper program.
Okay.
You can't talk about it. It's you learning about you. Becoming a professional about you. That's what it's about.
Me. Okay.
And, you know, I would love... Because I'll read you this. I already read it once on a podcast, so I won't read it again. But this lady said, "Listen, it has changed my life."
Wow, I will do
in
it.
In 1 week, she says, "I pay attention to now what goes in my body. I pay attention to all that stuff."
Just one time, and during the day, what do you eat during the day? Nothing, just water.
There's no eating during the day.
I was like, can you?
If
just
you can
say
only eat, you're like, so you can only eat at 7. So what do you eat during the day? Nothing. Nothing. You don't eat anything. That's the thing. But you know what? It's not punishment, and it's not a diet. It's a reconnection with nutrition, understanding why you eat at all.
And then your one meal, you can have anything you want.
Sure. But okay. I tell you what, you're probably not going to have Taco Bell.
But once you train your mind not to, then you want to eat right, like you said.
I call it untraining. We've trained our mind to eat too much food.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, this is, intermittent fasting. No, it's back to reality. There was a time when we did not have so much food available to us. I don't believe, you know, do you know what the appendix is for?
Yeah, nothing.
Doctor, excuse me, that is not true. Do you know what the appendix is for?
Well, you tell me. We call it in medicine, it has no function.
The appendix was, evolution created the appendix to help you digest raw meat. And when we found fire, it was not needed.
Oh, okay. So
evolution created it because back then...
It had some function.
Yeah, it had a function. We didn't have fire. We used to have to eat raw meat. That's what it was created for.
Oh.
Now, I'm sure that it has... But this was told to me because I asked the doctor, what was that? What is the appendix for? And he's like, the appendix was an organ that was used to digest raw meat.
Oh, I didn't even know that. Okay.
So in 1,000 years, 10,000 years, whatever, you and I will be gone. But maybe eventually evolution will create a new organ that helps us break down sugar.
Oh, yeah, it can happen.
Because sugar's, you know, so the body says, wow, you guys aren't going to put down the sugar. Let's create an organ to help us break it down or whatever it is that we have to do with sugar. Mm-hmm. So, you know, life's always changing, you know.
This is true. The body is, it's still in evolution and we don't know what changes we're going to have later on. But the funny thing is now when I tell patients that, you should lose weight. And then they're looking back at me and said, looks like you gained some over. So that then it said, I need to be the role model. I can't let myself, you know, basically practice what I preach, you know. That was my turning point. I was like, that's when I turned back to yoga, which I was falling off the wagon, you know.
Well, and I love all those things, but I do think that it's... And I will tell you that I've been doing this Just Supper for 10 weeks.
No, that's
I only
that's
eat one meal
time.
A day for 10 weeks. So I say try it for a week. You don't have to do it for the rest of your life. You don't have to do it after the week. It's really understanding uncomfortability, pain, gurgling sounds, you know, how
your
are
body
you, yeah, just
reacting.
How is your vehicle running mm-hmm. on this fuel? I always mm-hmm. say you don't go to Wawa, fill your car with gas, mm-hmm. and then drive down to the next Wawa and put more gas in it. You run you run the motor down, or you run the vehicle until you're out of gas, and then you fuel back up. We definitely don't fill it up and then squirt some in the back seat and some in the trunk and some on the roof. You know, you fill it up and you use what you need. I think that, you know, it's getting back to basics. I think as we've just become so entitled to so much food, and there's a lot of food out there and it is delicious, but I'm not sure we always need it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, try it for a week and come back and talk to me about
it. Oh, well, that would be great, actually.
I want to start a program called Just Supper. I'll send you, in fact, I'm going to send it to you right now. I'm going to send you a video of a guy, a doctor that was on this podcast, who talks about this one meal a day kind of thing. This, if mm-hmm. you can go like 16 hours, ideally 24 hours between meals.
Or fasting, yeah.
It's not fasting. It's back to basics. We're not fasting.
Well, the fasting was actually a lot of religious practices back in the days involved, like even now, the fasting thing.
Right, so because that, mm-hmm. in fact, you know, the when we go the week without meat or, you know, what is that? You know, the Jewish holiday or whatever.
Yeah, right.
You know, that was not just for the Lord, that was also because, you know, there, we
body.
You would eat too much protein and you needed to try to break it up.
Uh-huh.
And that was, so this is not new.
This is not new.
Eating so much food at these restaurants that we have now is new. And I mm-hmm. won't say, I'm not bad-mouthing restaurants or the restaurant industry. There's definitely a place for it. But it's new to have, like, so many places to eat. And Taco Bell and all these, and I love Taco Bell. I love Mexican food. But now, so I make, you know, grilled chicken with avocado.
Right.
Cilantro, fresh tomatoes, you know, just delicious food. I just make sure that whatever I'm going to eat that one meal is just super awesome.
Superfood.
Nah, not even superfood. It's just chicken. So you'll do that.
Yeah,
I'm
will.
Excited.
I will. And I'll let you know.
We're going to change the world, me and you.
We're going to change the world.
Hey-o. Listen, it's
it's a little changes, like, you know, you're talking to me about this. I'm willing to implement it. As that's the way the world should work, you know.
Well, I tried it on myself first, so it is tested.
I feel great.
I definitely feel great. I also found out I carry a lot of weight in my intestines. You know, and I don't know. I have my gallbladder taken out, and I don't know. Someone said, well, maybe it's because of your gallbladder being out. And I don't know if that's the case, but if I eat constantly, eat little meals, I constantly am full in my guts.
You feel bloated.
Yeah, and then my stomach distends. And another funny thing a lady told me was that if you hold your stomach in because you're ashamed of your gut, mm-hmm. that it tends to take the round out of your lower back, which tends to turn your bottom butt ass in. So then you have a new disease called noacetol, and your pants slide down. But it really starts to screw with your lower back, you know, if you're sucking in your gut, turning your spine out. So, you know, it's not good.
It's good.
It's just one problem after another. And nobody wants no acetol. That's just a bad it's a bad disease to have.
That's funny.
Hey, thank you for coming on.
Well, thank you, Tom.
Did we cover everything? Did we miss anything?
I think we did great. We learned from each other, and we had a great time.
I know one thing. I appreciate you being here. I appreciate you being upstairs. The more faces like you around, the better. So thank you.
Thank you for having me.
And so you'll try it, and you'll come back and talk to me.
I will try that for a week and come back and talk to you about it.
Pinky? Thank you.
Is 1 week enough,
Dr. Pinky? Yeah, no, I do think 1 week is enough.
Okay.
You'll be into your rhythm in a week. Uh-huh. You probably won't. I say do it for a week. You won't. If you do it for a week and you really give it an honest try. And I mean, the nice thing about you can't eat till 7 is you can't eat until 7.
Right.
So if you think that you can have a snack because you're freaking out at 5, can't eat till 7.
Okay.
It's a nice rule.
Okay.
But if it's 6, you know, someone was saying that, I forget what it was, but there was a reason. I said, well, then eat at 6. The idea is, you know, try to go 16, 18, 20 hours without eating.
What about coffee?
I love coffee.
Okay.
Well, and someone said, somebody else that was doing an intermittent fast said that when they do an intermittent fasting, that they try not to consume anything with more than 20 calories. So if your coffee has more than 20 calories, that you shouldn't do that. I think that's if you're trying to go into that isogenic, I could... What's ketosis state where you're kind
ketotic
of...
ketotic state, yeah.
But we're not doing that. This isn't about, you know, switching the how your body's digesting. This is just kind of getting back to basics and eating like we did 200 years ago.
Right.
With gratitude. I tell you, the worst part is as I'm cooking my chicken to eat, my stomach's about to, like, blow up. It's like, oh, my God, we're going to eat. Oh, we're eating. And then when I eat, it's like, oh, I don't even know what to do. It's interesting. All right, so we'll get back together, but thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to post this on my Rehoboth Social Facebook page, and you can check it out and let your kid listen to it and tell us if we were too dorky. But I had fun.
We were great. We were fun.
Absolutely. Dr. Pinky, thank you.
You are welcome.
I will talk to you
thank
soon.
You. All right,
dear. Bye.
Bye.